This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy. The final presidential debate revealed many of the differences between the incumbent president and Democrat hoping to unseat him. We get more from AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
They sparred over the government's response to the coronavirus, over who will tackle racism, and over who transacted with foreign governments. But both candidates were asked to respond to reports of people of color getting sick because they live near oil or chemical plants. President Trump.
The families that we're talking about are employed heavily, and they're making a lot of money, more money than they've ever made.
Joe Biden says he grew up with that in Delaware.
That's why so many people in my state were dying and getting cancer. The fact is, those frontline communities, it doesn't matter what you're paying them, it matters how you keep them safe.
Biden also focused on clean energy, while President Trump accused him of wanting to wipe out the oil industry. I'm Jackie Quinn.
U.S. officials say Russian hackers have targeted dozens of state and local networks in recent days. AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
With less than 2 weeks to go to Election Day, U.S. officials say Russian hackers have been targeting dozens of state and local networks in the United States, and data was stolen from at least two servers. The advisory comes from the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity Agency. The advisory did not specify any victims who were targeted, but added there is no information that any election or government operations have been affected. A Russian state-sponsored group, alternately known as Dragonfly or Energetic Bear, is believed to be responsible for the attacks. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The United States is condemning what it calls excessive use of force by the Nigerian military for firing on unarmed demonstrators. Amnesty International says at least 38 people, including 12 in the capital Lagos, were killed by the Nigerian army and police in a brutal crackdown on protesters Tuesday that drew international condemnation. This is VOA News. France on Thursday extended the anti-COVID curfew in place in 9 cities to large parts of the country. That means 46 million people are now being forced to stay indoors at night. The new measures will take effect from midnight on Saturday, with the prime minister saying the coming months will be hard. U.S. regulators have approved the first drug to treat COVID-19. Remdesivir is an antiviral medicine given through an IV for patients needing hospitalization. Its maker, Gilead Sciences, says that the drug is approved for people at least 12 years old who need hospitalization for their coronavirus infections. Meanwhile, AP's Mike Hempen reports, though job losses in the U.S. appear to be easing, a full economic recovery from the pandemic remains far off.
Job growth has slowed for 3 straight months, and the economy is still almost 11 million jobs short of its pre-pandemic level. The unemployment rate remains high at just under 8%, and major companies have been layoffs. Amtrak says it will cut 2,400 jobs unless Congress approves emergency aid as part of another stimulus bill.
That is AP's Mike Hempen. The Republican-led U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee Thursday approved President Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to a lifetime Supreme Court seat despite a Democratic boycott, clearing the way for a final Senate confirmation vote planned for Monday. Reuters' Jonah Green has details.
We did it. Judge Barrett's going to the floor.
Less than 2 weeks before the presidential election, the Republican-led U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee on Thursday approved President Donald Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to a lifetime Supreme Court seat, despite a Democratic boycott. Speaking on the steps of the Capitol, Democratic senators expressed outrage over what they saw as a rushed process.
Democrats will not lend a single ounce of legitimacy to this sham vote in the Judiciary Committee.
Thursday's vote clears the way for a full Senate vote on Barrett's confirmation planned for Monday.
That's Reuters' Jonah Green. China Thursday threatened to make legitimate and necessary retaliation over the U.S. sale of more than $1 billion worth of missiles to Taiwan as Beijing becomes increasingly strident over its claim to the self-ruled island. On Wednesday, the U.S. State Department approved the sale of 135 air-to-ground missiles to Taiwan. Democratic and self-ruled Taiwan lives under constant threat of invasion. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari urges protesters to end their demonstration.
I therefore call on our youth to discontinue the street protests and constructively engage government in finding solutions. Your voice has been heard loud and clear.
Amnesty International and Lagos authorities conflict on protest death toll. Tanzania's main opposition candidate says election officials are again harassing his campaign. And Guinean President Alpha Conde takes an insurmountable lead in preliminary results.
The Electoral Commission has started releasing results since Tuesday. And they promised to give all the results Friday.
And SADC urges member states to include migrants in their COVID-19 healthcare initiatives. The stories plus something O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has called on the End SARS protesters to end their demonstrations against police brutality and engage government in a meaningful dialogue. In a nationwide broadcast late Thursday, President Buhari said, while the protesters have every right under the Constitution to demonstrate peacefully, their intentions have been hijacked by hooligans bent on causing mayhem across Nigeria.
I would like to appeal to protesters to note and take advantage of the various well-thought-out initiatives of this administration designed to make their lives better and more meaningful, and resist the temptation of being used by some subversive elements to cause chaos with the aim of truncating our nascent democracy. For you to do otherwise will amount to undermining national security and the law and order situation. Under no circumstances will this be tolerated. I therefore call on our youth to discontinue the street protests and constructively engage government in finding solutions. Your voice has been heard loud and clear, and we are responding.
President Buhari says the federal government has made concessions in response to the protesters' five-point demands and was committed to extensive police reform.
The choice to demonstrate peacefully is a fundamental right of citizens as enshrined in Section 40 of our Constitution and other enactments. But this right to protest also imposes on the demonstrators the responsibility to respect the rights of other citizens and the necessity to operate within the law. As a democratic government, we listened to and carefully evaluated the five-point demands of the protesters. And having accepted them, we immediately scrapped SARS and put measures in place to address the other demands of our youth. On approving the termination of SARS, I already made it clear that it was in line with our commitment to the implementation of extensive police reforms.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Several Nigerian states, including Lagos, the largest city in Africa, have imposed curfews because of the protests. Amnesty International says at least 56 protesters have been killed in clashes with security forces during week-long demonstrations in Nigeria against police brutality. The group says at least 38 people died on Tuesday, 12 of them when security forces opened fire on unarmed protesters who had gathered in the economic capital, Lagos. Authorities have acknowledged some casualties occurred but downplayed the numbers, while the army has denied firing on protesters. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Amnesty International released the latest figure in a statement Wednesday night, citing evidence from witnesses. The group also says Nigerian authorities must be held responsible for killing their own people. Sheung Bakari is a program manager at Amnesty International.
Amnesty International stands by its position that more than 50 people have been killed in different parts of the country since the protest started. These shootings amount to extrajudicial executions. And we have said previously that there must be an immediate investigation and suspected perpetrators must be held accountable through fair trials.
Lagos authorities have yet to release any new updates on casualties. The shooting incident happened Tuesday at the Lekki toll gate in Lagos. On Wednesday, State Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu, who visited victims in various hospitals, said only one person had died from head trauma, contradicting Amnesty's position on the issue. Until now, no authority has claimed responsibility for the shooting, including the army. But the governor, who had earlier stated that it was beyond his power to command the military, says it has launched a further investigation.
That no sitting governor controls the rules of engagement of the military. I have nonetheless instructed an investigation into the ordered and adopted rules of engagement employed by the officers and men of the Nigerian Army that were deployed to the Lekki toll gate last night.
Thousands of Nigerian youths marched through the streets recently, demanding that a notorious police unit called SARS, or Special Anti-Robbery Squad, be dissolved over allegations of torture and killings of citizens. Despite President Muhammadu Buhari disbanding the group days after protests, the demonstrations continued. The protesters expanded their demands to include calls for police reforms and good governance. After the protests turned violent, Lagos authorities responded by imposing a 24-hour curfew. But protesters defying state orders remained at the Lekki toll gate before the shooting started. Security expert Ebenezer Oyetakin says protesters who had no one to represent them frustrated the government's negotiations. He says they were becoming too ambitious with their demands.
To the best of my knowledge, the sound has been very loud and clear, and gains have been made by the protesters. The ELSA's disaster has been ended. All other legitimate demands that they made can be looked into through negotiation, but the protesters made a strategic error by not identifying spokesperson or front that can engage government.
The killing of protesters drew international criticism, with the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres among many notable people who have cautioned Nigerian authorities. For the moment, the streets of major cities like Lagos and Abuja, where protests initially started, were largely calm and empty on Thursday. Many of the Nigerian states are adopting curfews and bans on protests to prevent any further breakdown of law and order. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Late reports from Guinea say President Alpha Conde has taken an insurmountable lead in preliminary results from last Sunday's presidential election. Reuters news agency reports that with 37 of 38 electoral districts counted, President Conde has received 2.4 million votes compared to an estimated 1.3 million votes for his nearest rival, Selu Dalein Diallo. A number of opposition parties boycotted the vote because they said President Conde's decision to run for a third term violated the constitution. The vote has been marred by violence. There were also reports that opposition leader Diallo is considering challenging the results because of alleged fraud. Mamadou Jean Baldé is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers in Guinea.
The Electoral Commission has started releasing results since Tuesday. And they are counting ballots and releasing results. They promised to give all the results Friday.
The opposition leader, Selu Dalein Diallo, had earlier declared that he was winning the election. Have you heard anything from him since then?
Yes, Selu Dalein said that he won by 53% of the vote count, according to him. Since that day, he had been confined in his residence in Conakry. He can go out.
There was a report that his house is surrounded by security. Is this for his own protection? What do you know?
Selu Dalein can go out because security are there. He can go out. He's like a prisoner since Tuesday. He said himself, and he has called his lawyer and attacked the government for that attack on justice today for that situation.
Mamadou, the Ministry of Security and Civil Protection has been speaking about violence against innocent civilians. What can you tell us about violence in Guinea?
Since Monday, as I said, more than 10 people, opposition support, have been killed in Guinea in clashes between opposition supporters and security forces. Violence occurs since Selu Dale Diallo says that he is the winner of the election round one. In Conakry, Labe, Peter, Telemele, many people had been killed by soldiers, by security forces, and many others have been injured in that violence. Mr. Conde, the president, in his speech appealed for calm and serenity, awaiting results.
Mamadou Diambaldi is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers in Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 23rd. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema presidential candidate Tundu Lissu says the Electoral Commission is once again harassing his campaign, but less than a week before Tanzania's October 28 presidential election. The Registrar of Political Parties on Thursday wrote to the opposition ACT Wazalendo party demanding explanation why its chairperson Malam Seif Sharif Hammond appeared on the same podium with Mr. Lissu on October 19 during a Chadema campaign rally. Lissu's campaign has already been suspended once for 7 days for allegedly violating election laws. Lissu, who has received the endorsement of the ACT Wazalendo leadership, says his campaign did nothing wrong to contravene Tanzanian election laws.
This evening, I received news unofficially that I have been complained against in the Ethics Committee of the National Electoral Commission on grounds that I have been endorsed by a prominent Muslim cleric, Sheikh Ponda Issa Ponda, who has been moving around with me for the past week, and his endorsement came as a major boost from such a senior figure, and apparently it has sent alarms ringing in all corners in the corridors of power, and therefore I've been complained against for welcoming Sheikh Ponda to my political campaign and share a platform with him.
The Office of the Registrar of Political Parties has written to Mr. Malim Seif Sharif Hammond because of his appearance on podium with you. What are the likely consequences?
Well, the Registrar of Political Parties cannot suspend a candidate from campaigning. What he can do and what the threat is, he can suspend or deregister a political party that he deems is acting contrary to his wishes. What Malim Seif Sharif Hammond did to endorse my candidacy and share a platform with me last week was not contrary to the law at all. On the contrary, it is actually not prohibited. President Magufuli has had his candidacy supported by two or three smaller political parties, and we have not seen anything befall them. It is, as I said, it is not against the law. The law requires electoral coalitions to be filed with the registrar. We are not talking of an electoral coalition between ACT, Wazalendo, and Chadema here. We are only talking of a political leader endorsing a candidate that he believes stands in a better position to win the election. That is not a coalition. And therefore, what the Registrar of Political Parties is doing is just to harass us for absolutely doing nothing wrong according to Tanzanian law.
Tundu Lissu is the presidential candidate for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. The Southern African Development Community, SADC, has urged member states to include migrants in COVID-19 healthcare initiatives. This after realizing that host countries were excluding migrants from various pandemic programs. Reporter Kundise Dube has the details from Habaruni, Botswana.
SADC Executive Secretary Dr. Stekomena Lawrence Tex said it was critical for countries to involve migrants in COVID-19 health programs. Tex was speaking at the launch of International Organization Migration Continental Strategy on Africa 2020-24 in the capital, Gaborone, this week.
In the wake of COVID-19 and its unprecedented impact on migration and the human mobility, it is heartwarming to note that the Continental Strategy on Migration in Africa highlights the importance of addressing health dimensions of migration, particularly in the context of our COVID-19 pandemic, and against our states' commitments towards achieving universal health coverage to which no one, including migrants, shall be left behind.
South Africa is home to the largest population of migrants in Southern Africa, with IOM estimating the total at 2.4 million. Most immigrants are driven largely by the pursuit of economic opportunities, while others flee political instability. Nomuhle Ajiti, a member of Africa Diaspora Forum, said host countries often shun migrants, particularly at a time of crisis like COVID-19.
You find that in most countries, governments prioritize their citizens, leaving out immigrants. This is a concern. We saw it with the food relief parcels. Governments are actually leaving out immigrants in most of their programs. Regarding health care, immigrants are turned away at health institutions because they are not documented or cannot pay the service fees.
A Zimbabwean economic migrant in Botswana, Desmond Taurai, said most of his counterparts face challenges when they seek health care.
Locals do not pay for certain services, but you find that immigrants are expected to pay at health centers. This will affect efforts to fight the COVID-19 pandemic as certain population is left out.
The IOM Continental Strategy for Africa aims to strengthen access to healthcare and other basic social services for vulnerable migrants in the COVID-19 era. For VOA, this is Mgondi Sidube in Gaborone, Botswana.
New rapid coronavirus testing, soon to be available throughout Africa, could be a game changer for the continent, the World Health Organization says. But health officials from across the continent note that the new testing regime comes with new protocols and raises the possibility of finding more cases on a continent that so far has shown a relatively low case load. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Millions of new rapid tests for coronavirus are being rolled out across Africa, a move that could be a game changer by helping health workers identify and treat cases. Dr. Matsidiso Moeti is the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa.
This would be a game changer, we think, in the fight against COVID-19. These high-quality rapid tests will help meet the huge unmet need for testing in Africa. While there are testing challenges in many parts of the world, we've seen that African countries have faced a significant gap throughout the pandemic. For example, Senegal has significantly boosted its testing capacity, but it still has testing 14 times less than the Netherlands. Nigeria is testing 11 times less than Brazil.
Unlike the currently used polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, tests, these tests don't require labs for processing. They're also cheaper and don't rely on expensive, fragile reagents, like the PCR tests do. The new tests seek specific proteins called antigens on the surface of the virus and can yield results in under 30 minutes without needing to be sent to a high-tech lab. As a result, the new tests can also be deployed to rural clinics, allowing health systems to find cases outside of major population centers. But, notes Dr. Susan Ndida Nabata, head of Uganda's National Health Laboratory Services and Central Public Health Laboratory, the new tests aren't a complete replacement. The rapid tests are designed to detect fairly high levels of antigens, meaning people who are in the early stages of infection may falsely test negative. Since the pandemic took off in March, the sub-Saharan African region has seen 1.2 million confirmed cases, among the lowest caseload on the planet. Nabata says that more widespread testing could see those numbers rise.
That we have good quality, more quality tests, which will increase access to testing, and we might see more numbers coming on board. I heard from Guinea that when they started use of the RRDT, their testing numbers went up, and the identification of cases also went up. So I think that it could be one of the causes that we are seeing, that we are not seeing a number of cases in Africa as compared to the developed countries.
Anne Moiti says that's all the more reason to maintain vigilance in sub-Saharan Africa.
The region has experienced a downward trend from a daily average of more than 15,000 cases in July to less than 4,000 in the past month. But in the past couple of weeks, this decline has slowed down to a plateau. As countries ease restrictions on movement, some increases in cases are expected, but preventing an exponential rise is absolutely critical.
Better testing and stronger health systems play a big role in the fight, she said, but so do ordinary people. To that end, she repeated her guidance. Wear masks, keep your distance, and wash your hands. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
For Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the NSARS protest in Nigeria, where some of the country's sports stars continue to lend their voice in support of the demands of the protesters. Kamaruddin Usman is Nigerian-American mixed martial artist who competes in the Ultimate Fighting Championship and is the current UFC welterweight champion.
As this starts to unfold right now, this is so heartbreaking to watch all of this destruction, all of this chaos that's going on right now. Where are you, Mr. President? Buhari, how is it that this is lasting for more than 1, 2, 3 days?
Anthony Joshua is Nigerian-born British professional boxer who is a two-time unified heavyweight champion. He also sent messages to the protesters.
I know it's getting to a stage where things are heating up and tensions are high. But in my prayers at night, I'm praying for peace and positivity, because I know the people on the ground aren't trying to be heard for their own benefit. It's in benefit of the next generation.
For his part, Odion Jude Ighalo, Nigerian professional footballer who plays as a striker for English Premier League club Manchester United, expressed his disgust at the Nigerian military for shooting unarmed protesters.
I would say, Nigerian government, you guys are a shame to the world for killing your own citizens, sending military to the streets to kill unarmed protesters.
In football news, Uganda's under-17 women's team coach, Ayub Khalifa, has returned to carry out physical training sessions ahead of the first leg of the final qualifying round for the World Cup after he contracted COVID-19. Early in October, the World Cup preparations of Uganda's under-17 women's team were derailed as a result of the positive tests. Uganda will host Cameroon on October 31st, with the winner of the tie over two legs qualifying for next year's World Cup tournament in Mumbai, India, and coach Khalifa is ready to go.
I'm really very happy that I'm back for training. I'm back on duty. I found the girls well prepared. I'm just adding some flavor on what the coaches have been doing. I'm really very grateful for the coaches who've been around handling the game.
In Kenya, Football Kenya Federation has confirmed the appointment of Jacob Ghost Muli as a new national football head coach. Jacob Muli returns to the national fold and now takes the mantle from Francis Kimazi, who parted ways with the FKF on mutual consent on Tuesday. In basketball news, Cape Verde put up a determined show of wits as they outclassed Chad 90-73 in their opener at the Federation of International Basketball Association Afro Basket Invitational Tournament in Yaounde, Cameroon on Thursday. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.